Now, if I sound like I'm being bossy, it's only because I care.
Hello, everybody, but especially you. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 17, They Shoot Mothers, Don't They? And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Butting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hi, Sarah.
This episode is a mother, but before we get into that, let's talk about Again with this, episode 38, dropping March 12th, let's read the February 1996 Playgirl interview with Jack Wagner. I regret to inform you that there are unlikely to be extensive visual aids with this episode, since literally every page of Playgirl that is not this interview is covered in peen. I'm not complaining. I'm also not trying to get busted repurposing porn for y'all. But we'll have lots to talk about outside of the cockucopia, so we hope you will join us on Patreon to listen to that episode. That's patreon.com/againwiththis.
Ugh, I'm really looking forward to this, so thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Playgirl, and thank you, listeners.
Thank you, eBay. Thank you, penises. Okay.
Thank you for joining us for this double episode. Why they did this in January, I don't know. I mean, why they did this in the middle of the season, it's because the show was such a huge hit. But as Sarah pointed out before we started recording, like, why wouldn't they do this in February for sweeps? Don't know, but
Don't know either.
This is happening.
Yeah, I'd also like to lodge another complaint with the episode titling authority at Melrose Place. It's based on They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Which, if you're not familiar with that film, like, it's really dark. This isn't as inappropriate as I Am Curious Melrose was.
Yeah.
But it's up there. Like, you're talking about horrible suicides and people dancing themselves to death. And then there's this.
Yeah.
Like, rending of a mother-child relationship. Like, okay, you know what? Find some other reference with mother in it, please.
Well, we have two stories to get through before we even arrive at that one, so let's get started.
Okay, stay mad, y'all. We're gonna do this. Put on some Depends. Here we go.
We're gonna start with our D plot. Sydney meets a guru, because of course she does. So, when Amanda shows up at her door, Sydney is full of excuses for why her rent is late, but it doesn't matter. Turns out she would need to write a new check anyway, because rent on all the units is going up. Clip two.
Well, I've been in negotiations with the rent control board for months, and as of yesterday, I won approval for an across-the-board rent increase.
Congratulations, I guess.
Thanks.
Amanda accepting
these. So weird.
And her accepting these congratulations with a humble laugh as if Sydney actually means it is,
I know,
so her.
Congrats on being a rapacious slumlord. Oh, thanks. This whole thing.
So Sydney's rent is going up by $200 a month. And since I think her rent before was either six or possibly maybe even only $400, that is a lot. Like, either way.
Yeah.
So Sydney obviously will not be able to afford that, but Amanda, of course, does not care. Sydney either needs to come up with the new rent or give her notice by the end of the week. And I was pretty sure a rent hike legally can't go into effect immediately, so I looked it up and I was right. In California, a rent increase higher than 10% requires 60 days written notice by the landlord. And actually, in 2020, it went up to 90 days, which, like, yes, this was almost 30 years ago, but I doubt the law was much different then.
Yeah, agree.
Besides which, if Sydney signed a lease, like, would that not be her rent for the term of the lease? Like, isn't that the point of a lease?
I think so. Yeah.
But sure, we need conflict, and here's some. So here we go.
Sure. How else can you get Tracy Lords into the building? It does seem like there are other ways, but sure.
So Sydney goes to see Jane at the studio just in time to find Jane on the phone begging some creditor or other for an extension on a bill. So Jane is having money problems. They heard us, but
yeah.
Where's Chris? Still don't know. Sydney asks whether Jane has heard how much her new rent is going to be, but she and Amanda have been playing phone tag. And Sydney has a brilliant proposal. She and Jane can solve their money problems by moving in together. Jane's response to this is to literally LOL and then tell Sydney to find herself a roommate. Sydney's place is a studio, so yikes, except when she takes a couple of roommate solicitations off a corkboard at a diner and puts up her own, suddenly it's a one bedroom now. She's got the same deal as Billy or whatever.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, when she was fucking Michael, the bed was definitely in the living room, but fine. It's a one bedroom with a pullout couch that somehow she also bought.
But fine. I mean, isn't she in Sandy and Rhonda's old place?
Well, she's definitely not in that place because that was a two bedroom.
That was a two bedroom. The layout suggested it was actually a one bedroom and she just had her shit in the living room, but I don't know. Or care. It doesn't matter. This is it all does a, not. You know, MacGuffin.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And by the way, I swear the diner is just the Peach Pit set and they're cheating it so we don't notice. You can see this in the visual aids. When she goes to the counter, it just looks like the corner of the Peach Pit with like without the jukebox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, Tracy Lords is behind said counter, being friendly and easily getting Sydney to say she's been spending a lot of time alone lately. And then she notices the pile of roommate wanted flyers next to Sydney and asks what her place is like. Sydney describes it, not telling it particularly hard, and Tracy Lords says she's actually looking for a place herself. They arrange for her to come and see it. Introductions are made. Tracy Lords is actually Ricky. And when she comes to see the place, she likes it. Sydney admits the cons are of the unit are the the complex are that the other tenants can be a little nosy and the landlord is a real wench, which, by the way, it's an insult you don't really hear anymore. It's such a 90s word.
that really was. I think it was on its way out at that time. But yeah, you really don't hear that one anymore. That and wench rag, which was our preferred high school insult.
Yeah, I think it must just be that when everyone was like, no, bitch is okay to say, it was like, all right, I guess we don't need wench anymore.
I guess.
But Ricky is fine with all that. Happy to hear there are a couple of cute guys, which are there? I count one.
Not who are looking at your team, but okay.
Yeah. And the next day, Sydney helps Ricky move in and a bunch of Ricky's female friends follow with boxes. And Sydney says this, clip 3.
They seem nice. They are. And you're going to love having them in your life. Because you know what? Not only did you get yourself a new roommate, you got yourself a whole new set of friends.
That's cool. It's going to work out really great, isn't it?
I wouldn't be here if I didn't think so. Ready to grab the next load?
Of red flags? Sure.
The next load of bullshit. Yes.
Nice.
So on the way, Ricky leers at Billy outside of his apartment and asks if Sydney ever did him. Sydney, shocked, says she didn't. Ricky thinks he looks ripe for the picking, but Sydney never thought about it. And Ricky's planning on getting herself and Sydney into a lot of trouble. And the next day, Ricky asks Sydney about her dad and learns he's a businessman who owns a couple of companies. Ricky can't relate because her dad is or was a loser. She's also heard that Sydney's sister owns her own clothing business, but Sydney says Jane isn't going to hand her any of her riches. What riches?
Yeah. Write me in care of the Chris Blues. Yeah.
Here's an IOU. Yeah. Ricky assumes Sydney's parents help her out financially, but Sydney says they're not close. So Ricky changes tack. Clip 4.
Martin says the trouble with life today is parents who refuse to take responsibility for their children.
Who's Martin?
He's this great guy. You'll meet him.
Is he your boyfriend?
No. He's the leader of this personal fulfillment seminar I've been taking. I guess you could call him my guru.
Oh, an LA guru. Neat.
Have you read Martin Eddicks?
This was, I'm pretty sure, the same season that this was happening to Kelly, like same writer's room, guys, really? Same time? Wow. Anyway.
Cue Alan Toy.
Yeah.
Rolling in.
A guru in LA? What could go wrong? Anyway. So Later, Jake is in the middle of Joe drama, which we will get to, when he runs into Sydney in the courtyard and doesn't really have time to talk. Ricky also has opinions about him, namely that he has a hot bod. True.
True.
And that Sydney can get him back. Clip 5.
Ow. Come to a meeting. Meet Martin. The last thing I need is a lecture.
It's not about words. It's about love. Sid, I used to be a loser, too. I didn't have any friends. Nobody liked me or supported me. Martin showed me how to make all my dreams come true. And it won't cost you a penny. It's free.
Free seminar? That's how you can tell it's a scam.
Yeah.
But Sydney has nothing else to do, so she goes, and the guru, Martin Abbott, comes over to welcome her personally and state very clearly that Sydney can stay for as long or short a time as she wants. Everyone hear that? And then steers her to a seat up front and starts lecturing that you teach people how to treat you, basically. So if people are shitty to you, it's your own fault. And if you think you're crap, that's how people will treat you. Change your mind, change your life, etc. And at Shooters the next day, Ricky comes by to harass Sydney about her thoughts on Martin and try to get her to sign up for his next course. Sydney says she can't afford it. Ricky claims most people earn $50,000 in the first 6 months after they complete Martin's seminar. Sounds airtight to me.
Sure.
And maybe Sydney can work off the cost of the course in the office or on a boat. Just kidding. She doesn't say that. Or in a million-year contract.
We. Don't sue us.
Yes. And when she's able to contribute, she will. Sounds great to me.
Sure.
Good job, Sydney.
Yeah. I mean, where could a catch possibly be?
Yeah, I don't see one.
Meanwhile, Allison Mack comes in stage left and stuffs her into the trunk of a car. Like, okay. We're
Moving
already
on.
At the cult? Sure.
Moving on to our C-plot. Allison and Terry have some real ups and downs in Miami. And elsewhere.
I don't get it. Oh, I get it.
Terry comes to pick up Allison at the office for a lunch / AA meeting combo, and Billy is snitty about it. Clip 6.
Listen, sometimes these things go long, so if it runs late, would you just tell Amanda I had a dentist appointment or something?
Yeah, it's pretty convenient, isn't it? Get to eat, see him, and go through the 12 steps all at the same time.
Billy, Terry is a friend from AA. We try to support each other as often as possible by going to meetings together. Unless you've been through it, it's a concept you can't possibly understand.
Okay, freshman, simmer down.
But also, isn't one of the steps you're not supposed to, like, lie? Like, even about something as dumb as, you know, say I'm at the dentist, I thought. Maybe
yeah,
I'm
wrong. Or, I don't know, don't drag other people into your shit.
Yeah.
Like, you should be working on making amends to Billy and not dragging him into your fucking afternoon delight scam, but whatever.
Yeah.
She'll learn.
True, sadly. So then Matt comes into the courtyard the next night when Billy is loitering around outside Allison's, and it takes one question to get Billy bitching about Allison not being around for him because she's always working or at an AA meeting. And Matt tries to get Billy to understand that he is not the center of the universe, but, and you're not going to believe this, it doesn't really work. Clip 7.
Like, that's pretty typical behavior when someone gets sober. I mean, the only way that they feel they can take control over the addiction is to completely restructure their lives.
Yeah, but to the point where they exclude the people they supposedly care about.
Well, for her, dealing with the addiction is primary right now.
Which I guess makes everything else secondary.
All I can tell you is the best way to stay close to someone who's going through something like this is to be 100% supportive.
I have been.
Really? Have you gone to any meetings with Allison?
No. That's not because I haven't thought about it. You know, she's got her routine and her friends and this whole new life revolving around AA. That I'm on the outside of.
Billy, admission is free. Just go to a meeting with Allison and show her that you care enough to find out how it all works.
This is a bold move. Like, never mind trying to make Billy scheme. Trying to make us sympathize with him being like, well, she went to a new school and now it's like all she cares about is her like new friends and all their cool Benetton stuff. Like, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, you stooge.
Yeah.
Billy. Ugh. It's
well,
Billy.
That's A. B, the other thing that's that annoys me about this plot line, and we were talking about this from another angle in the last episode with regard to how they're writing Amanda about it, but like, if they weren't complicating Allison's whole deal by making Terry and his shittiness part of it, like, you know, she should be focusing on her sobriety. That should be job one. And the problem is that they're muddying the waters by having her horniness for Terry be part of it.
Yeah.
Because Billy, like, if that wasn't an element, it would be completely uncomplicated that Billy is not being a good friend to her right now.
Yeah.
So but
the sad thing is, like, a broken jaw trap is still right twice a day. And in this case, it's like, well, she's not focusing really on her sobriety.
Yeah.
She's focusing on Nick, which is whatever. But it's like, this actually would be a sort of interesting, albeit not appropriate for a nighttime soap angle. Mm-hmm. For them to take in terms of like, well, you are kind of supposed to try to put aside your old life, which is full of triggers and stuff like that.
Right.
And be very intensive about it for the first while, if that means a month or a year. Like, no, you don't have time for other people because you have to deal with your own shit. That's that's the premise. But it's like you can't really have that story in a. Like, this is a This Is Us story and not a Melrose Place story. And
Yeah.
But it's a bold move to make Billy whine about her sobriety without just saying, you know, I think she's boning this guy and not focusing on her sobriety. Like, just have him say that. And then he's not an asshole.
Right. Because
anyway, we agree.
Yeah. I mean, they did establish that he cared about her sobriety. I mean, he put on an intervention for her. That was real, you know? But also, like, the whole thing of, like, just go to a meeting. Like, is that really okay? Like, he's not an alcoholic. The whole anonymous part is that, like, people who aren't alcoholics are not just supposed to, like, show up and see who's there, I thought.
I mean, I think there are, like, certain meetings that it's, like, the focus is like it's men's only, or this is an anniversary meeting, or I think it's not called an open meeting, but there are meetings where it's like civilians are welcome to come. But I think you're not. I mean, I've been to them and I've been to anniversary meetings, but I think that, you know, and I was there because I knew somebody who was celebrating an anniversary, but it's like I would not have felt comfortable going just to, quote, see what it's about.
Right.
At his meeting? No. Like, I would go to a different meeting and then be like, I noticed the following things. What's up with that? Like, I would find that invasive, even from someone I was close to, but I'm also not the demo, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, Matt is sort of right.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like Dylan bringing Brandon to the to Bev Niner AA meeting, that it's like, but he's going to know some of those kids. Like, can't you bring him to one in Reseda?
Right, right. Yeah. And if Billy's issue is like, I don't know how to relate to someone now that she's sober, like, Al-Anon? Like, that's what Al-Anon is for.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, again, we agree.
Yeah, so, we're way overthinking this.
We really are.
It does make me sort of retroactively feel a little bit bad for always clocking Beverly Hills 90210 so hard for their treatment of these storylines. And it's like, isn't Dylan an alcoholic? Like, I totally understand why they didn't feel like maintaining the fidelity of that. But they were just like, hand wave, like, oh, all right, that's probably better.
Yeah, true. Anyway, cut to Allison holding forth in a meeting with Terry beside her, because of course, and Billy coming in while she's mid-share, clip 8.
I just never realized how deceptive it was. I thought that drinking gave me the courage to tell people off, to tell them how I really felt, but now I see it for what it was. You can't be honest with your words when you're slurring them. I mean, the fact is, what you're really doing is being dishonest with everyone, and including yourself. So, in my sobriety, I've made a vow to be truthful with the people who mean something to me, even if that might seem inappropriate to some. For instance, there's someone who's helped me a lot. I couldn't have made it this far without him. Getting sober and meeting him are the two best things that have ever happened to me. Hopefully, of course, he feels the same way. Thanks for letting me share.
So Terry starts petting her hair and Billy storms out.
That was a very cozy AA circle. Like, were you in someone's walk-in closet? Like, space out the chairs.
Yeah, when they show the door after Billy's leaving, it's got like a, it clearly looked like a hotel room. Like, it had a lock like a hotel room door. So maybe.
Yeah, anyway. Maybe.
Yeah, it seemed like Billy thought she was talking about him until she said meeting him. And then he was like, whoops. Bye.
Yeah. And then Terry has like a semi while he's adjusting Allison's hair. And it's like, I just don't. No.
So Allison then wakes up with Terry in her bed. He noticed that she didn't sleep well, but with all her tossing and turning. She doesn't know how her life fits together anymore, specifically where Billy and everyone else from her drinking life belong in it now, to Sarah's point. Terry says some people in her life won't know how to relate to her now that she's sober and she might have to cut them loose. And again, as we've been saying all along with the two of them being together, like, he sure has a lot of answers for someone who has been sober precisely as long as she has. Like, really, dude? With the lecturing? Okay, fine.
Yeah, I mean, this is just Charlie again.
Totally. And,
but if so, then at least put in a line about how he's been to rehab before.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of assumed that as part of Terry's backstory because he is Charlie, but a football player instead of a writer. So,
yeah. Oh, my God. That was also happening at this exact same time.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's, I think someone said it either in our Twitter, responding to our Twitter on Patreon, that it was like, just put a Rolling Stones hat on him already. Like, totally.
True.
Whoever that was, I apologize for biting your shit. And please call me out on that at AWT90210. You are smart.
Yeah, it's true. Allison supposes that Terry's right, but she doesn't like it. He thinks right now she needs to get away for a new perspective. And maybe she should come to Miami and watch him win the big game, which I thought meant the Super Bowl, but it's just a playoff game. And then... Terry's getting out of the shower in a towel to open his hotel suite door to Allison. No one is mad. There's a gif in the visual aids because I'm a pervert, apparently. He was afraid that she might change her mind at the last minute, but she knows what she wants. And apparently that is to start fucking him immediately. But the honeymoon is over quickly as Terry returns from the game in a terrible mood, having fucked up and sent the rivals on to the Super Bowl. He wants to drink, but Allison tries to get between him and the mini bar that he, for some reason, did not have emptied of alcohol before he checked in. Clip 9.
Don't throw away 6 weeks of sobriety on a football game.
It's not just a game, Allison. It's the playoffs. The ticket to the Super Bowl. You wouldn't understand.
You're a girl.
One drink is not going to hurt.
Oh, God, who do you think you're fooling? Come on, let's make love or go to a movie, take a walk.
Look, all I can think about right now is booze.
We'll get through this one minute at a time, one hour at a time.
Fine. But you better get these bottles out of here.
Sure.
When you travel, you need to find the meetings in your town.
Yep. This should not be her responsibility because, no, again, shouldn't.
There is a phone book in your room.
Mm-hmm. Duh. So when Allison gets back to the office on Monday morning, she finds people crying in the bullpen because Caitlin has started the firings and people have to pack their shit and go, like, now. So Billy reports that he's having dinner that night with Caitlin, who's already told him his job is safe. He asked her to spare Allison, too, but is a bitch about it. Clip 10.
Why?
To be honest, I don't know. I must be a glutton for punishment.
Okay.
Or you recognize that it's not legal to fire her since people have made statements about wanting to let her go because of a substance abuse issue, which mm-hmm. is a pre-existing condition. It's not legal.
Nope. But probably regrets that immediately because then her phone rings and it is Terry. Clip 11.
Don't say that. My feelings haven't changed.
Oh, I don't believe this. You're talking about your future and you take a call from your lover. Now, I went to Matt for you.
Terry is a friend from AA. He's having a bad moment. I'm sorry.
So am I.
Ooh. He's such a parental scold in this scene. He's, I can't believe you.
Such a bitch. Also, lover, gross.
Yeah, please. Please, no.
So, at good old Montezino's, Terry has waited until after a whole dinner to apologize to Allison for losing his shit in Miami. He's going to start seeing a psychiatrist who works with top athletes, and Allison is so proud of him. He also has something for her, and it is a fucking engagement ring. Clip 12.
The minute you walked into the room at the Twin Oaks, I knew I wanted to spend the rest of my life with you.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, Terry, we're both trying to make changes in our lives. We're newly sober.
Newly sober, newly married.
Marriage is a big decision.
Keep it as a friendship ring. Talking of how much you mean to me, then whatever you want, just keep it.
Terry.
Allison, you deserve it for putting up with me, please.
I can't promise anything.
It's okay with me. For now, anyway.
Wow. Okay.
This is real bad. Like,
yeah,
you already know he's an addict. He's making reckless decisions. And then on top of that, you also know he's a sex addict. And maybe there's something else at play here, perhaps.
Yeah.
Like, maybe.
I mean, also, the ring is bad.
Yeah. In the grand tradition of engagement rings in the Starriverse. It's not good.
No. I mean, it's better than usual, but for an NFL starting quarterback, like, buddy, a couple baguettes, something. Yeah. God.
So at the office the next day, Billy notices the ring and rather rudely says that Allison is just substituting one addiction for another, which, say that behind her back like a normal person, but she wishes he could be happy for her, to which he replies, she's a classic codependent, and then they have this exchange, clip 13.
Who made you the expert?
You did.
Oh!
Oh, I mean, I don't think that's quite the burn he thinks it is, but the line delivery was good. Credit to Andrew Hsu. That he did well.
He did. But also, like, if the end of that exchange about the ring was her being like, I'm not going to say that we're engaged. Like, I can't promise anything. So put it on your other hand. Like, what are you doing? Or don't wear it.
Or wear it around your neck. Or, I don't know, do something in which Billy will not feel he has to involve himself. But this is a soap, etc.
Yes. But you brought this comment on yourself. Like, you have another hand. You have other fingers.
You have another hand. Yeah.
She does.
There are things that you should be using either of your hands for instead of Terry right now in the life of your recovery. I'm just saying.
True.
Take it over.
So that night, Allison lets herself in at Terry's carrying a bag of groceries. You have to comment when she gets to the kitchen on one of the props that you noticed, because I did not notice it at all, but it's in the visual aids.
I mean, I don't know why I noticed it, but she's sort of like, you know that this is finally where she's getting to the Cheat Works factory, which, fine.
Of course, yes.
So maybe I paused it or whatever, was just like not looking at her because I was looking at the edges of the frame to see where the other woman would be. Spoiler. And Terry, again, starting NFL quarterback, has one of those like hanging racks in his kitchen where you usually hang pots and pans. Fine. Mm-hmm. But there's like a copper heart-shaped cake tin hanging from it. Like maybe just walk through the set once and pull stuff that belongs in the Carter's kitchen, which maybe this is. Like, I don't... I'll have comments on that also, but it's like, it was just really bizarre. And the more I looked at it, the more I was like, what? Like, is he going to hide another ring in a cake? What is happening?
It is a weird detail. Well clocked, Sarah. So when she calls out and gets no answer, she starts looking around for him. And of course, hears giggles from him and a female voice and finds them both in bed. So Terry like roughly shoves his side piece off and goes chasing after her. And by the way, I made a gif of this too. He shoves her so hard that she like bounces on the bed like it's a water bed, which maybe it is.
Oh my God, Terry.
I hope not. So then he tells her the other woman meant nothing to him. She's just a bimbo who hit on him. It's part of his addiction. Allison tells him talk is cheap, but she is not. And he stops her again just as she's about to walk out, but she just hands him back his ring and tells him to give it to the bimbo. And the next day, Terry stalks Allison to the door of the office, promising to do whatever she wants if she'll give him another chance, and she snaps, "It's too late." He thought giving her the ring would keep him faithful, but he still just wanted to dive on anything with a pulse. It will shock you to learn, does not mollify Allison. And he then claims he had to hit rock bottom before he realized what he had with Allison, but now he does, and she doesn't care. They have nothing in common but their addiction, and now it's over. And so he wastes no time confirming that she was right to get rid of him. Clip 14.
Fine, if that's the way you want it. Hey, I'm a famous football star, and you're nothing but the big loser in this relationship. I can have any woman I want.
When I first met you, I thought you were arrogant, but I was wrong. You're pathetic.
I feel they missed an opportunity to ever be like, not this one. And then slap him.
Yeah. But
this is fine.
She decided to go high, which is a choice also, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's it for Terry. Aww. Bye.
And we never see him almost naked again.
True. All right, on to the B plot.
Oh, thank God.
The saga of Joe's baby ends in a highly improbable fashion.
Yes. You had me at ends. Here we go.
A panicky Joe goes to Shooters to tell Jake the latest dumb decision she made that has removed her child from her care. As you will recall, it was putting him in Nanny Emily's car, which she then drove away without Joe.
And then she reenacted the Streets of Fire video. So sad. Thank you.
So then she explains to new viewers why she can't call the cops about this. And Jake points out that this obviously was not a random baby snatching. And Joe realizes eventually that that is true. So then Joe goes to the hospital to confront Kimberly about it in front of a bunch of her colleagues with maximum melodrama. Clip 15.
I know you have me, you crazy bitch, and I'll die before I let you take my baby away from me again. Don't you wish they had moved the psych ward to the fourth floor? Excuse me, won't you? Take your hands off me. Not until you tell me where he is. I don't know what you're babbling about, but I happen to be on duty. Don't you plead dumb with me. I know that you and the nanny were operating together. Where's Austin?
Are you saying someone stole your child?
Where is he?
For your information, I'm in the process of adopting a child of my own, so I have no interest in your offspring.
But you know who does, don't you?
Well, I can't be sure, of course, but I did place a call to the Carters recently.
Mm-hmm. Why?
To let them know that their grandchild was very much alive. Frankly, I felt it was my civic duty.
Dr. That was Joe punching Kimberly. Yeah. Wow. It's very satisfying. Mm. You know, Joe brought this heartache on herself, as we have said many times, but it's still nice to see Kimberly get her comeuppance every once in a while.
Although I don't understand why she admitted talking to the Carters, except for the benefit of new viewers, but that's sure. Fine.
Yes. So then Jake goes over to Joe's that night and learns that she has a plan. Clip 16.
Oh, God.
I am borrowing Matt's car and I'm going up to the Carters and I'm taking my baby back.
Taking my baby back, baby back, baby back.
I mean, oh, God. Like, and whatever. This sounds like a stupid plan, but the Carters do not notice them parked outside of their house. The only other car, never mind a Geo Metro or whatever that box is, for yeah. miles. Like, yeah. Okay, if they're not going to notice that, maybe this plan will work. Who knows?
Yeah. Joe is also planning to bring her gun, which Jake correctly says is stupid. And as he wrestles it away from her, probably a considerable danger to himself, because I'm sure it's loaded. She shrieks that she can't do nothing and so on and so forth. And he understands, but he thinks the smarter place to leave the gun and bring him instead. Because, yes, Jake, famously a cool head who never makes impulsive decisions that make things worse. But she's relieved and she hugs him. And there's a dumb scene where they stop at a diner and she sees some brunette with a bun and a baby and thinks it's Emily, even though, like, she has a 2-day jump on them. Like, that's not her, and clearly it's not. So then Jake and Joe are trying to find a point of interest at the Carter manse when some neighbor dude catches them and says the Carters are on vacation. Jake claims they're relatives of the Carters who thought they would come and say hi. And Joe, trying to be casual, says that if they're vacationing nearby, they could go see them. And the dude is like, they're at the lake. And Jake is like, cool, which lake? And the guy's like, seems like if you're related, you would know. And maybe you should leave before I call the cops. Jake is like, bye. Even though Joe wants to say impress the guy, like, does it seem like he's just about to tell you, stupid, be cool for once? But yeah, anyway,
go to a gas station, get a map, find the lakes.
Yeah. But what they actually do is go to a cabin, and it's clearly the same place that Michael took Sydney to try and kill her. Mm-hmm. You can see this in the visual aids.
Yeah.
And as Joe gazes tensely out the window, Jake irritatedly tells her she needs to go to sleep. She snaps that she can't. And they talk about, you know, it's all going to be fine, and end up kissing. After the commercial, we see that, hey, it's that Tracy Walter is no longer the desk guy at this place, or we're supposed to think it's a different place, which it's not. And no. his replacement tries to tell Jake into staying more than one night. Jake asks about a nice lake he heard about, and the guy says it's probably Clear Lake, an hour away. He's even got a phone book, and Jake immediately finds the Carters listed right above Nick Carter, another great catch from Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the same guy. Perhaps writing a check dated 1984 will jog this guy's memory, and he'll tell you exactly which house they're in.
Yeah. So back in the car on the way to Clear Lake, Jake asks if Joe wants to talk about the previous night. She does not. She can't handle him saying he's sorry or regretful, but he isn't. He feels closer to her than he ever has. She loved being with him and she really needed it, but her relationship now is with the baby and it's all she has room for. Well, we'll see. So after dark, Joe and Jake are parked outside the Carter's house, which is like the same cabin they just stayed at from the back. Like, it's covered in the same stone. Mm-hmm. You'll see this in the visual aids, but fine. And they both duck down as a station wagon pulls up and the Carters get out with groceries, but no baby. Jake wonders if maybe they're wrong, but Joe is certain she's right. And she is. Sometime later, nanny Emily's giant boat of a car pulls up and she gets out and hands the baby to Mrs. Carter. Joe wants to get out immediately, but Jake stops her and says, well, she continues protesting that they have to call the cops. Clip 17.
If we don't, it'll never stop, Joe. You'll get your baby back, and then the Carters will come after you. It's like a crazy circle with these people, and you'll be stuck in the middle of it. You'll always be looking over your shoulder. Both of you. Now, the Carters are guilty of kidnapping. We can prove that. If we go to the cops now, they'll be arrested. And more than likely, they'll be jailed. With a good lawyer, you'll probably get custody back.
And losing him again, Jake. I couldn't.
The only way to make sure of that is to do this legally, and then no one can ever take him from you again. Now, there's a payphone at the bottom of the hill. Let's drive down and call.
No. By the time I get back, they could all be gone. I'm not leaving my baby out of my sight again. Please don't ask me to do that, Jake.
Okay, look. I'll run down there. I'll be right back. You stay in the car.
and we'll wait till the cops get here.
I know that Jake is a respected legal scholar, but I don't know why he thinks one kidnapping cancels out the other. Like, everyone is guilty of kidnapping in this equation.
Yeah. Also, I mean, the whole thing proceeds from the premise, which we've ranted about before, that Joe would not have gotten custody in this situation.
Yes.
And yet she's still, it is like, oh, with a good lawyer, that it's like, but she has Waxman. So that's irrelevant. And why, when she was fully prepared to like jam her gun in her pants and like walk after the Carters if she had to, would you be like, okay, promise me you'll stay until the cops get here? Like, does that seem like something she's going to do?
Mm-mm. However, he puts Joe in the passenger seat and orders her to stay there. And she's a woman, so she does. And he goes to a payphone at the bottom of the hill, sure, and calls in a kidnapping. But left alone, Joe watches Mr. Carter come to out of the house while Mrs. Carter watches him looking worried and then goes back inside. And Joe then gets out of the car and creeps closer. And apparently Mrs. Carter has like dog hearing, because from inside the cabin, she hears Joe like step on a fucking twig and comes outside to yell to whoever's out there. And instead of just staying hidden, since this old broad was definitely about to go back inside, Joe emerges from the shadows like fucking Terminator 2. And this happens. Clip 18.
You have my baby in there.
Oh, my God.
How did you find us?
He does not belong to you.
You're trespassing. Now get out of here. Get out.
Stop right there.
So dumb. I mean. So Joe the idiot runs toward the house because she thinks she's faster than a speeding bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Carter calls her bluff, fires at her back. She falls. Like, what? They shoot mothers, don't they? They do.
Yeah.
So when we come back from commercials, Jake's there along with the first responders who are rolling Joe away so they can deal with the bullet in her back. Jake says he witnessed the shooting. Mr. Carter sought Joe and Mrs. Carter told him to do it, which she denies, which, like, did he? I don't think he was there. But anyway, sheriff believes Jake and arrests Mr. Carter, even as Mrs. Carter bleats that Joe tried to kidnap their grandchild. And Jake has to go to the hospital. And as a parting shot, as it were, he tells Mrs. Carter she better pray Joe recovers. And then Jake is sitting next to Joe's bed the next day. She's alive but bruised. She doesn't care about herself. What about Austin? He's fine with a social worker. Joe wants to see him. Jake looks down and reluctantly admits that there will be a custody hearing in L.A. in a few days. Joe says you can't do that again. Like, what did you think would happen? Like, seriously, tell me. I would like to know, but don't worry. Jake talked to Waxman, so everything's going to be fine.
Oh, Jesus. Why?
Yeah. Joe wishes she had listened to Jake and stayed in the car, but he says she didn't pull the trigger. Mr. Carter got arrested, but he's out on bail. However, Jake thinks Mr. Carter won't have a home court advantage in L.A., and no court will award the Carters custody after, you know, one of them shot her, which... fair, although no doubt Waxman will find a way to fuck it up. So then Joe wakes up that night to find Mrs. Carter standing over her hospital bed, because even though someone shot Joe and that person's now out on bail, there's no police protection for Joe. But anyway, clip 19.
You haven't won, Joe. Dennis and I will never give up. Even if you win custody now, we'll keep you tied up in court for 10 years.
Can't you just leave me and my baby alone?
That baby is the only thing I have left for my son. My son that you murdered in cold blood.
Get out of here before I scream.
I won't let you have my grandson, too. I'd rather see God take him before I let
Jesus.
I'd like
lady.
To add also that I've always relied on the kindness of strangers.
Yeah, was she always the Southern? This seems like
Julia,
a real turn.
Let me explain. Like, okay, Sugar Baker, take it easy. She wasn't. She had that like mid-century Hepburn-y thing before.
Right.
that Grandma Rose too had.
Yeah. Anyway, like, back at Joe's place. Back at Joe's, Jane looks after her and her gray pajamas, which you can see in the visual aids, while Jake goes to check in on Shooters. Joe is scared of the hearing and knows her life is out of control, but Jane calls her a wonderful mother, citation needed, for having risked her life for Austin. Like, this kind of talk does not help Joe.
No.
Joe just wants to do what's best for his welfare. Jane says that's what she'll focus on at the hearing the next day. So then we're in the chambers of the same judge who presided over the original case. I don't know if Mrs. Carter is just really confident or what, but she has not even taken her coat off as she confirms that she was in fear for her life from Joe, who says that Mrs. Carter's unstable, which, like, Drew. Mm. Then their lawyer, Williams, pipes up and things devolve from there. Clip 20.
My client means, Your Honor, is that Joe Reynolds has repeatedly threatened her and her husband.
That's a lie.
Dennis Carter, Your Honor, is the one who tried to kill Joe, not the other way around.
My God, she came to our house, to our cabin. She already killed our son. I was just protecting my family.
You hired a woman to impersonate a nanny for the sole purpose of kidnapping your grandson.
She made us think he was dead.
The court gave us custody.
He was ours. Just stop it. Just stop this madness.
If you can't control your client, Mr. Waxman.
Joe, please.
No. My baby is just 8 weeks old. It's been through hell.
He doesn't know. It's fine.
It needs peace. And if I can't give that to him, I want you to find a family who can. A family who will love him as much as I do.
No, no, it's a trick.
Your Honor, I don't want my baby to be in the middle of this unholy war between me and the Carters. I love him. How much do you love him?
Okay, so she looks at Mrs. Carter at the end of this with, like, the smuggest game, set, match expression. Mm. Like, come back from that, bitch. Like, you can see this face in the visual aids. And so, keep that in mind as you listen to this next clip, 21.
Oh, how noble of you, Joe. You lost custody 3 weeks ago. We are going to take our baby home.
I disagree. Sit down. Why don't you take your seat too, young lady? Mrs. Carter, you and your husband have, by your actions, shown yourselves to be morally bankrupt. As far as this court is concerned, the shooting of Ms. Reynolds has nullified the current custody agreement. Joe, I've been considering the same solution you suggest. With your permission, I'd like to explore it further.
Specifically, I'd like to cut the baby in half, Solomon style. Why
exactly.
not?
Exactly! Like,
Jesus.
This clearly, thank you, is a Wisdom of Solomon moment, except all he did was like, yeah, you're right. Neither of you should have this child. So bye. I'm going to give it to some anonymous third party for reasons. Like,
yeah, I mean, look, there is absolutely no reason that Joe would not have custody, which we've said, and I think is, let's call that stipulated.
Yes.
But having not gone that route now, this being a nighttime soap opera where there's really not room for a woman with an infant, they either have to get rid of Joe or get rid of the baby in some way that is not actually cleaving little Austin with a sword. So, like, this is now done. Fine.
Yeah.
Don't try this shit again with a baby show, please.
Yes.
Please. That baby was super cute, though.
He was really cute. I agree with you 100%. It's like, but it's like you had so many off ramps for this plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why did you not take them? Anyway, let's wrap it up. Matt and the sour faced social worker bring the baby to see Joe for one last look. He promises good people have adopted him and he registered Joe's name with the child services so he can come find her when he turns 18 if he wants. Fortunately, none of us will know when that happens. Joe asks for a moment of privacy, and though the lady social worker really doesn't want to, she's overruled, and Joe has one final goodbye monologue to the baby to tell him she'll think about him every day for the rest of her life and beg him not to hate her for this. There's nothing she wants more than to be his mom, even though she volunteered to give him up to, you know, child services, but whatever. And then it's time, so Joe hands him back to the lady so she can, you know, pass him on. She hugs him one last time and tells him not to forget how much she loves him, and we never saw him again. No. Hooray!
I mean, yeah, it was a cute baby. This is hard to watch. It's well done by Daphne Zuniga. Just, you know, this was a mistake, and it went on too long, but now we're out of it. Sweet.
Finally, our A plot. Peter tries to take Amanda out of the picture permanently. Peter rolls off Caitlin, unable to get in another quickie before work because he has to beat Michael there. Caitlin doesn't get why Peter is letting that junior extortionist bother him, and Peter says he has his reasons. She remembers that he has reasons for signing Amanda to a 3-year contract, too, but it doesn't matter. She's done investigating D&D, so they just need to put Caitlin in charge, and she knows how to nullify Amanda's contract, too.
Okay.
I love that the phrasing of that makes it seem like Peter might have been fucking Michael. Which, again, would make for a more interesting show, but whatever.
Sure.
So Caitlin marches into Amanda's office with a proposal for changing insurance companies to save $40,000 a year. The only issue is that they require all employees to take a mandatory drug test, but Amanda loves invading her employees' privacy, so clip 22.
I hardly see that as a problem. If anything, it's a solution. Considering what Allison's rehab cost us, weeding out other substance abusers is a smart thing to do.
Fine. Then I'll start the arrangements. Only, I think the announcement about the mandatory drug testing should come from you. Your employees already think I'm big brother around here. They don't need more evidence.
All right. I'll round up the troops.
So Amanda leaves. Caitlin gets on the phone.
Hi, Peter. It's Caitlin. It's your turn now, darling. Go to work.
What could that mean? So, Amanda announces the mandatory drug testing at a staff meeting, hand-waving that it won't be an issue for anyone who doesn't have a drug problem, which, sure, but it's advertising, so probably half of them do. They're just managing it better than Allison, who looks sour at all of this. And afterward, Billy tries once again to take Allison out for a casual meal and to discuss something. But once again, she has plans, but she can chat now. What's up? So he spills about seeing Peter and Caitlin fucking the other night and asks if he should tell Amanda. And Allison advises him not to, since it'll just blow back on him, which, like, just because it blew back on her when it happened to her doesn't mean the same thing will happen to Billy, since Amanda likes Billy and hates Allison. But anyway. So Kimberly's feeling neglected that night as Michael pores over brochures for expensive real estate. She comments that they're supposed to be saving for the baby, but he's confident about his prospects, and then tells her about Peter's kickbacks and how he's going to leverage it to weasel into Peter's practice in Beverly Hills. She is all about it. And it seems to me like the fewer people who know about this, the better. Like, this seems like a tactical mistake on Michael's part, but I guess we'll see.
Well, and just don't tell Kimberly literally anything except that, like, you're almost out of half and half. Like, I just don't. Like, oh, you know what this scheme needs? Some kook balloons. Like, no. No, it doesn't. Yeah. Don't involve her.
No. So after dinner at Amanda's place, Peter tries to get something going with Amanda sexually. But she puts him off, saying she's tired. And kissing her face, he comments that she's warm, which she thinks is just from being in the kitchen. But he feels her neck and says it's swollen. But he has antibiotic samples in his bag. Again,
for
just throw them around.
A virus.
He insists that she take one, and she does. And on the links, we finally get to see Jack Wagner's championship golf form and his terrible hair, which you can see in the visual aids, as he leans forward. It just all falls down in a very weird way.
Oh, my God. And he's wearing, I mean, I have watched every episode of The Sopranos many times. I am from New Jersey. I have never seen that horrible a golf shirt in my life. It mm-hmm. is catastrophically fugly. And the mm-hmm. hair, oh my God. It's like Prince yeah. Valiant gets a flea dip. It's so bad. I mean,
yeah.
when he does get it cut, I think he has a Caesar, which is also...
Oh God, right.
Not great. Like a lot of good looking men attempted that shit and almost none of them worked it out. Like I didn't even really like it on Clooney to tell you God's no. honest truth, but
no.
Yeah. Like dark days are coming, but this is insane. I wasn't even yeah. concentrating on the dialogue. I was so like, whatever the bad version of Ensorcelled is.
So anyway. Peter's dubious about Michael's proposal. That Peter take him on at his practice. So Michael just threatens him again. And Peter says he'll consider the scheme, but he needs Michael to deal with one of the pharma companies that he's grifting. I'm paraphrasing. Michael would love to. So Michael has to make sure the research project stays long term because Peter just bought a chalet in Aspen. Of course he did. And he needs to keep up with the mortgage. And then Amanda's at the hospital asking a nurse on the desk to page Peter, finding out he's not there. She's confused because he told her to come by and pick up a prescription, but the nurse has a bottle for her and hands it off with instructions. And that's when Kimberly rolls up and makes small talk, including telling Amanda where Peter actually is. And Amanda quickly covers that. Yes, of course she knew he was going golfing with Michael, even though she definitely did not. Kimberly suggests having Peter and Amanda out for dinner at the beach house sometime now that the boys are so friendly. Amanda will totally follow up with some dates that are good for her. It's not going to work out couple friend wise, Kimberly.
No,
sorry.
I don't think so.
So then Amanda goes to ask Matt about Peter's research grant. Matt is shocked by the suggestion that a man of Peter's stature could be on the take. But when she says she already asked Michael about this and that she doesn't believe what he told her because she thinks he's in on it too, then Matt seems more convinced, but he would like to know why he should help her. So she hints that the rent increase, remember that from 500 years ago at the start of the episode, may not apply to him if he does. So Amanda's just finished yelling at someone on the phone about wrapping up all the drug testing today when Matt comes in with the info she asked for. He asks if she's okay, and she gets defensive about it until he says because he noticed her taking pills. She says she has the flu, and turns the conversation back to him. He confirms Peter's grant does not exist, and she curses out Michael for lying to her. He adds that he found another grant for a project from the same company, which Michael is running. So Amanda goes stomping up to Michael at the hospital and yells at him for being a selfish little worm, then warns him that Peter will crush him as soon as Michael's no longer useful. Michael confidently says he can take care of himself and adds that Amanda needs to get some rest. She's not looking too hot. And she actually is, as always, like if they're trying to set up an illness storyline. And they kind of are, no spoilers, but they could at least put some bags under her eyes. Like, she just looks the same as always.
Yeah, they use, like, just slightly less lipstick. But the fact is, like, she never has a ton of makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, compared to everyone doing a smoky eye to work a day shift at a restaurant in the cast. Yeah. Like, she is, like, mascara and foundation, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, to pull it back to make her look sick, I don't. But they're like, I guess we won't use rouge. Like, okay.
Right.
Anyway.
So then Amanda's sitting down with the insurance screener saying she's on antibiotics, never takes any recreational drugs at all. And then bitches about Allison and her rehab bill again, some more, though without mentioning her name. She hopes the tests will come back clean. The insurance guy says 2-5% usually don't. She thinks that's very sad, but she's very sure her staff is clean. And she's just taking her antibiotics the next morning when Peter calls to ask how she's doing. Not much better, but to his prompting, she does promise to take the entire course as prescribed. And he misses making love to her, and she tells him to save that thought for tonight, which is when we see he's in bed with Caitlin again. Like, this is supposed to be a surprise. Every time they do this, it's if it's going to be a huge shock again. Like, it never is. Quit yeah. it.
Like, if it were Matt that you panned over to, now I'm interested.
Exactly.
In fact, please go back in time and do that.
Honestly. So also not a surprise, Amanda entering her office later to find an ambush waiting for her, Peter, Caitlin, and the insurance guy. Clip 23.
Amanda, we have the drug test results in, and we have some rather unfortunate findings. You want to take over from here?
Miss Woodward, your tests came up positive for traces of THC, the active ingredient in marijuana.
What?
We ran the test twice. It's really quite conclusive.
Your employment contract strictly prohibits the use of drugs on the job. You leave the board no choice. We have to let you go, Amanda.
This is ridiculous. I don't use marijuana. And there's obviously been some mix-up. Peter, you know I don't do drugs.
Does he? I'm just a little unclear on what the show thinks we think of the timeline of Amanda, like, figuring out that Peter is a scumbag who's fucking Caitlin. Like, it's just weird that, like, she's, you know, they're on the phone and it's like, hold that thought. Like, she's definitely sketched out by something.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like, that he is in her office being like, we got to let you go. Like, what does he think she thinks right now?
Well,
I guess it doesn't matter, but, you know.
Yeah, she's been turning on him for several episodes, like, since right. He started being all controlling before Christmas.
Sure. But then it's sort of unclear. Well, I guess my question is actually what he thinks she knows at this point. Like, why? Right. Why wouldn't you just let Caitlin do this? Like, how does it benefit his play to be present for this?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter because it's all going to just, like, sort of keep rolling past this. It's just interesting that mm-hmm. he's like, sorry, hon, we got to let you go. Like, but your spot would be blown up by now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that she ever necessarily figures out that until Billy tells her that they're fucking.
Right.
Right. So.
Right. But I mean, that's what I mean. Like, why implicate yourself in anything besides Caitlin's hiring that's happening here?
I think he is he's so arrogant that he just wants to be there to see his handiwork.
Yeah.
You know,
that could be.
So Amanda realizes what he did and confronts him about giving her fake antibiotics that would show up on her drug screen, while he, of course, admits nothing and says how sorry they'll be to lose her at the agency. And when she presses him, he responds with the cover narrative, clip 24.
You clawed your way to the top, but you couldn't handle it. You were too weak. So you turned to drugs as a crutch.
You are lying, and everyone here knows it. They're probably in on it, in fact.
Sounds like paranoia to me. That's an obvious indicator of marijuana usage.
That's right. Enjoy the moment, Peter. Guess what? This game is not over. It's my move. And I'm going to be handing you your jewels on a silver platter.
Not my jewels! What that plinky piano was about.
I know. Okay. Very VC Andrews. Not sure.
Yeah.
She looked pretty intimidating, though.
She did.
Yeah.
I mean, considering how tiny she is, she gets it done.
Yeah, I wouldn't fuck with her.
So then Billy's over at Amanda's while she recaps the getting drugged by Peter plotline to him, because now we're in the second hour of the episode. And in response, he chooses this moment to spill his hot tea in the weirdest way. Clip 25.
The night that I dropped off the performance reports at Caitlin's house, Peter was there.
So?
So they were going at it like minks in heat.
Okay, little Richard. Like, yeah. What?
That's not the only performance report I got. You're just going to leave that one there? Okay. I mean, also, there's some open mouthing during this. Like, Billy is continuing, continuing to ask Billy to scheme. And it's just not. It's not schemable.
No. And she's obviously annoyed that he didn't tell her this before now, and even more annoyed when he says he told Allison, and Amanda guesses correctly that Allison told him not to pass it on. But anyway, she had an airtight 3-year contract, and Peter got her to violate the terms by using drugs. So she gets Billy to help her move the dresser so she can dig out a pill that rolled behind it the other day. Success. So she takes it to Matt and asks him to have it tested. He thinks it's crazy that Peter would pull this shit and wouldn't believe her at all if not for, you know, all the other shady shit he totally uncovered Peter doing. And he thinks most of the incriminating evidence must be in Peter's personal files, but maybe there's something he hadn't thought of. And sometime later, he does prove that, yes, it was THC in the pill. And apparently her tolerance is very high because its effect on her personality and mood were none.
Like, yeah.
That's the funniest part.
I think it was maybe actually CBD that they found, because it's just like not really doing that much. Yeah. Like, I think once she sounds a little bit like she has dry mouth and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, she's paranoid. She does have that. But I mean, you know.
Is it paranoia if you're right? I don't think so.
Right. Exactly. So Matt confirms it can be traced back to Peter, but it'll take a couple of weeks, which is too slow. D&D's board of directors is meeting in 2 days. Matt's doing the best he can. Amanda's going to have to bluff. He'll keep digging. So Amanda then goes to the hospital to confront Peter loudly in a hallway in front of lots of witnesses about drugging her. She orders him to go into the meeting tomorrow to affirm her leadership, get rid of Caitlin, and sever all his ties to the agency. His response, clip 26.
Do you really think that you can threaten me?
Do it, Peter. I'm going to hand your head to the AMA, not to mention have you arrested.
Scream all you want, honey. You got no proof. Besides, nobody's going to listen to the sour grapes of a recreational drug user. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Peter, you've been too good a teacher. I wouldn't be here if I didn't have proof.
Ta-da-da. Shall I share the caption that I used for this moment in our visual aids?
Please, because it is also the lead pick for this episode.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the sound of Peter's scrub pants filling with poo. Because Indeed. They totally are. It's yep. Really a nice job by Jack Wagner, who's like, gulp.
Yep.
Good time.
So then Peter stomps up to Michael while he's scrubbing for surgery and explains why Amanda's accusations are Michael's problem. The only THC in the hospital is assigned to Michael's research project. Peter's going to deal with Amanda by offering her a payoff, but since she's not speaking to him, Michael has to arrange a meeting with her and also not mention anything about money. So the next morning, Kimberly wants to shower with Michael, but he gets rid of her so he can call Amanda. Like, take your time arranging your scam, why don't you? Like, you slept on it? Okay. So he pretends to be on her side and tells her to meet him in Peter's office at midnight so they can copy Peter's personal files, and then hangs up before she can argue about it. And Thomas Calabro talks so fast in this scene, I had to play it back literally 4 times to even figure out what he was telling her they were going to do. So I guess Kimberly's a fast showerer and he had to really get speedy with it. I don't know. So then he ushers Amanda into Peter's office, and they've barely been there 10 seconds before Peter comes in and catches them. And even Michael is shocked when Peter raises the stakes by grabbing Amanda around both arms and jabs a needle in her arm. Clip 27.
I changed my mind.
Michael, you set me. Oh,
Jesus. That's the drug kicking in. It causes abdominal spasm. It must be extremely painful.
Oh,
what did you give her? It looks like a clear case of appendicitis. Wouldn't you agree, doctor?
No.
Appendicitis. Open the door.
What? Ow.
Open the door! Open
it! Oh, my God. Ow!
Why are you doing this? Just look. Offer her the cash. Trust me, she'll take it.
I'd love to sit and chat with you, but this girl needs to be operated on. It doesn't look as though she's going to make it.
Listen, I'm calling the cops.
Mancini!
You've got a bright future, Mancini. Now, we could be running this hospital together in the next few years. Two of the richest, most powerful surgeons in town. Now, don't be stupid. You've lost patients before. One more is not going to make a difference.
The end of that is so good. He's like, he's right. It doesn't.
But in the same sort of tone that it's like, well, but if you move the car now, you don't have to do it again tomorrow. Fine.
Yeah. Like, exactly.
She's dying. Cool.
So after a commercial, Peter and Michael are in surgery about to try to kill Amanda with fake appendix surgery when Michael hisses at Peter that he can't do this. And Peter curtly reminds him that he's been bitching about not getting enough hours in the OR and orders Michael to cut Amanda open, as though that phrasing would not alarm everyone else in the room who is not in on this murder plot. Mm. So Michael brings the scalpel close to Amanda's abdomen, and then clip 28.
There's nothing wrong with this patient. Her instructor, he wants to kill her.
Great, check her white count.
What?
Have you lost your mind or just your nerve? Get this doctor out of here. It's clearly unstable.
Yes, sir. Come on, man. Mancini, you're calling it a night.
Oh, I got it. You gotta believe me. I'm telling the truth.
I'll make the first cut. The appendix has to come out before it ruptures.
Give her a milligram on naloxone IV, stat. Unless you want to be an accessory to murder.
Just do it. Yes. Oh, my God.
You better get a plastic surgeon down here. I think I broke his nose.
Very theatrical.
Yes, in my notes. Sarah, no, not the money
not
maker.
Not the face. Don't hit him in the face.
So Amanda wakes up in a hospital bed the next day and immediately starts looking for her clothes. Michael materializes in the doorway to tell her everything that she missed when she was, you know, unconscious. He also says he told the cops what Peter did and claims he'll be going away for a very long time, which I doubt it.
No.
But she tries again to beat Peter to the meeting. Peter's not going to be there. He is detained. Michael puts her back in bed and asks her to thank him for saving her life, which he got cut doing on the arm by a scalpel by Peter. And then it's time for the board to take a vote. But I guess Amanda talked Michael into letting her go because they make it just in time. And she announces she has evidence to challenge Caitlin's fitness as head of D&D. Recaps Peter's whole THC scheme. And Michael adds that Peter's in police custody, charged with attempted murder, among other things. And after the board murmurs its consternation at this, Michael adds that Caitlin was formerly Peter's secretary back in Minnesota, which is possibly more offensive to Amanda than anything else.
Yeah.
And Caitlin does not make a super great case for herself in response. Clip 29.
I've proven I can run D&D better than she ever could. She's running it into the ground.
That's a crock and you know it. I'm one of the best account executives in this business. My record speaks for itself.
That's right. Everybody knows you're a self-centered, backstabbing, twisted tramp.
If I'm guilty of anything, it's trusting Peter Burns for being what he appeared to be, an honorable and decent man.
Like you know anything about being decent. I am so sick and tired of people usurping my power. Good Lord, doesn't anybody have a brain in here? Can't you see what's going on? Can't you see what she's trying to do? I'm not having it. I will not have it.
Well, it's up to you to decide who you want running D&D. I think it's pretty clear.
Well, even though most of us here were brought in by Peter, he's evidently displayed an appalling lack of judgment. I don't think a vote will be necessary. Ms. Mills, I think you need a vacation somewhere else. You got 5 minutes to pack up your office and get out.
One day, you will all be so sorry you ever messed with me.
I'm already sorry I ever met you.
I'm not. Don't leave.
I know. The look that they exchange at the end of this, so Caitlin's good. Like...
yeah. Game recognizing so game. Big time.
100%. Like, it's so sexy. Like, the two of you kiss, kiss, kiss. But they don't.
Yeah. And or just go around yelling at people. Come yell at me.
Either way.
I'm fine with it. Mm-hmm. I'll kiss you both. Oh, she is so good. Do we ever see her again? I didn't want to check because I didn't want to be sad.
Let's find out.
All right.
Let us name our episode MVP while I look her up.
Caitlin. Caitlin.
Yeah, Caitlin's pretty good.
I will
She's
not have it.
She's pretty good.
Oh, so good. I love her.
Yeah, God bless.
But also Ricky. Good.
Yeah, she got the job done.
Yep, she definitely did.
Sadly, that is Caitlin's last appearance on the show. I'm sorry to report. I'm going to say... Boy, I'm going to say Allison because she got some off Terry and she had enough self-worth to get rid of him also when, you know, when it was time.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Least valuable player.
Oh,
Peter. Joe.
Oh. I mean, I feel like Peter did not double and triple bag the scheme, first of all. I understand he wasn't expecting to have to include Mancini, but like once Mancini is included, try not to get Mancini'd.
Yeah.
And don't prescribe antibiotics for viruses. This is like the first fucking day of med school. I know it from watching ER. Come on, man.
Well, he didn't, in fairness. Hmm? I mean, he said he did, but he didn't.
Well, yeah, but she bought
this
it.
This time. She did. I mean, that's on her, but yeah. I'm still going to say Joe, even though, as we've said so many times, I'm glad that we're done with the baby. But, you know, you brought so much of this on yourself. This did not have to happen. And no. I'm glad we're done with it.
Yeah, me too.
That's it.
We're not done with this podcast, though. Next time on Again With This, L. Ricky Hubbard masterminds a crime spree, Amanda falls iller, and Kimberly tries to Rorschach blot Matt out of the one crappy plot line he has access to these days. You'd better have access to a roll of Tums before you peep our visual aids, which you can find for every episode of Again With This on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And you don't have to break anyone's nose to hear extra episodes, just go to patreon.com/againwiththis. Tons of bonus content, so join today. I'm Mini Bar of Damocles, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. I guess you could call Tara Ariano my guru. You can follow her at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Mink in Heat, David T. Cole. Sure, why not? Talk to you next time.